From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com, you're listening to The Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
Brian and Vinny, along with Granny and Craig and sometimes other people. They're paid by a con, and they'll say,
everybody. It's Brian, Vinny, Craig, and Landstorm Show, February 16, 2020. You ever have one of those days where it's just one after another? You ever have one of those days? I know Vinny does. It's like every
day. I was just going to say, yes.
Anybody else have one of those days?
Not like that.
Of course.
Like a half hour ago, Filthy texts me, goes, hey, how do you do one of those watch-alongs on YouTube? I was like, I don't know. You should ask Tony or Jared. Well, how can I set it up so I can do it? I don't know. Ask Tony and Jared. And like he just kept asking me questions. I was like, ask Tony or Jared. I don't know. I don't know how to do that. I've never done it in my life.
I'd be willing to bet you there's a tutorial video on YouTube on how to do it.
Then Lance messages me. Do I need a new video link? It's like, I don't know, dude. Let's ask Jared or Tony. Because when you ask me, I'm just going to ask them. I don't know. And then, right when the show's about to start, Jason Online here gets mad. Where is Brian custom emoji? What am I even paying for? And then he goes, Brian refuses to allow the subscriber YouTube chat to have a custom emoji of him like every other Empire talking head. You think I got anything to do with this? I'm actually impressed that people think that I have so much power and that I'm so capable when I'm not. Anyway.
Not just that, but the inclination to determine whether or not there should be a Brian custom emoji.
Dude,
woke up one day and said, no!
I didn't even know there wasn't a Brian custom emoji until 30 seconds ago when Jason Online got mad about it.
Wait a second, do Vinny and I and Lance have custom emojis?
Apparently, I
remember seeing mine once upon a time.
You do?
Yeah.
Vinny does. I know Granny does. There's a Granny one here.
I'll be darned.
I don't know if Lance does.
I learned something new today.
Yeah, join the club. Apparently, there's a siren that everyone says is Lance. Oh, you have a gold... No, I don't control everything. I control almost nothing on this site. Do you understand?
I can vouch for that, actually.
All right. Let's talk about... we have two shows to talk about. We have the NXT PLE and also this Australia show, this Grand Slam show from Down Under. But Lance didn't watch one of these shows. And so we're going to be starting with NXT, which he did watch. Is that correct, Lance?
Yes, because I have YouTube, but I don't subscribe to the two separate subscriptions I need to be able to watch Collision in Canada.
Oh, really?
Yes, you have to both subscribe to TSN, the channel, and then a separate subscription for TSN, the streaming service app.
I see.
And I'm not paying twice to watch Collision.
It's fair.
Okay, I'm looking at some of these emojis here.
Oh, boy.
Okay,
this is what people are paying for.
No, get this. Okay, we got Craig.
Yeah,
what's we got Tom.
Is it like me, my face? Or?
Yeah, it's the one where you're looking up and you look like Jaws on the cover of that. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, so there's you. There's
you look like Jaws.
Filthy Tom.
He casually explains that you look like a fish.
Yeah, Filthy Tom. There's Dave. There's Granny. Jim Valley. Vinny. Giraffe.
So they got the important people.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the camera missed your head.
Oh.
Denise.
Because you're short, see.
Producer Rob. Producer Rob has his own emoji.
Now, there is someone who would demand his own emoji.
I do not.
That's true.
There appear to be two sting emojis.
What?
Yeah. They're like cartoon stings. There appears to be an AJ Phenomenal One emoji. There's a couple of belts. There's a tap emoji, a 10-7 emoji, and the gold boat emoji.
Huh.
But there is no Brian emoji. So, no, everyone, I don't know why there's not. Listen, go to the front page, go to help desk, say, I need a Brian emoji for YouTube, and that's it, okay? I can make some silly faces if we want to make it here, whatever. Okay, let's go.
Alrighty then. We watched NXT Vengeance Day, February 15th, 2025.
Good show.
Load this up on the Peacock app, and the first thing that starts is the countdown to Vengeance Day. It's not a separate program. It's just an hour tagged onto the front.
And actually, you're wrong. It is 54 minutes.
Well, then I missed 6 minutes of the
show. It oddly started at 5 minutes, 6 minutes before the top of the hour, the actual PLE. It was bizarre. But yeah, the first 55 minutes or so is, you know, that one fella, the curly hair, he probably has an emoji and I don't. But he's running down the show and then, like, you know, 5 minutes before the top of the hour, they just start doing matches. It was very odd.
The thing that I found odd, I started watching the show partway through. And when I had watched whatever the last WWE thing was I watched on Netflix, probably the first Raw, like it's there on the first screen. It's like, you know, tune in live. And it's like, so I go to Netflix and I assume there's going to be, you know, NXT Vengeance Day watch live. And it's like, it was the home screen was promoting watching SmackDown from Friday. And I started scrolling through menus and I couldn't find it. I had to go to the search function for NXT in order to find Vengeance Day. It was hard. And that's when it was actually airing live.
Second-rate country.
There you go.
I don't know why.
It's a touchy subject these days, dude.
I guess so.
Yeah, it is.
All right, let's keep moving.
Stephanie Vaquer versus Fallon Henley for the North American title. So Vic noted that people were filing in even as the show had begun. Maybe because they started early. But early on, this place looked absolutely tiny, like no bigger than the Performance Center. And then about two or three matches in, it had filled up, and they cut wide shots. They lit up the arena. It looked much, much bigger.
It did look like there was no one there at the beginning of the show. And Vic even said, like, fans still filing in. Maybe they thought it started at 5, even though it started hours earlier. Well, but I think, Lance.
Even when they did the women sitting ringside for this match, when they did the Carmen Petrovich one, there's like 20 empty seats around her. Like, she's sitting in an empty section. And I was like, I can't believe they did that. And then also, too, I actually texted Brian while I was watching this first match. And I'm like, how many tickets did they sell? Because this place is blackened out. And he's like, 4,000. And I'm like, if you told me 800, I'd believe you. And then literally minutes later, they turned on a whole nother bank of lights and showed more fans. So I guess late arriving people.
I think that before we get into the match here, we should start with the first debate of the evening, which is, who is the worst announcer?
Vic.
Because Booker T.
The debate is over.
Booker T. did win Worst Announcer in the Observer Awards.
How many years in a row?
I believe on this show, Vic was significantly worse. Vic absolutely sucked. And it wasn't just this show. It was also Vic was on SmackDown this week.
Okay.
He was replacing Joe Tessitore. And I don't know if I just, like, noticed it now, but goddamn, this guy. Like, Vince is gone. You can call people by their actual names. There was a Miz segment that went, like, a half hour, and he could not say the words, The Miz. He had to repeatedly call him the A-lister. The A-lister. And by the ninth A-lister, I was like, fuck off, dude. I can't handle this anymore. And it was the same thing on this show. It was like, anybody who had a nickname, he would only refer to them by their fucking nickname. And I was infuriated. And then in this match, you know, there was a spot during the match where Steph goes for a springboard, Fallon knocks her off the apron, Jasmine takes the ref, and JC boots Steph outside. And the fans are furious. And they start chanting, ref, you suck, because the ref didn't catch him. And Vic is like defending the ref. He goes, it's not the ref's fault. The ref got distracted. And Booker T, who is allegedly the worst announcer, goes, yeah, it is his fault. He shouldn't be distracted. And Vic's like, well, you know, Jasmine jumped up on the apron. And Booker's like, it doesn't matter. He needs to pay attention. And Vic's like mad at Booker for like, I'm like, dude, Booker's right. It's a fucking referee's job to pay attention. Brian? Yes. Let's hear it.
He's putting all the heat on the ref, killing all the heat for the heels. Doesn't matter if he's right. This is how wrestling works. He was preventing the other woman from interfering. If you point out it's stupid, it destroys every distraction finish they've ever had, every pull the ref spot they've had, and it takes the heat away from the talent and puts it on the ref. Don't point out shit that makes the match worse.
Well, he's done that a couple of times. But Vic is still significantly worse arguing with him about it. What's a ref's fault? God. That doesn't mean the heels didn't do something bad.
It's his fault, Brian, you stupid moron.
It is his fault, though.
In the production meeting, they would say the ref needs to be drawn so this can happen. He's doing it. It's like when you blamed fucking Nick Patrick for being a bad ref.
He was a bad ref. He fucking sucked.
Doing anything because nobody in WCW gave a shit.
He was terrible. Sorry, anyway, Craig. Let's talk about this great match.
Well, while we're on the subject of the announcers, my favorite moment between the two, the tag match starts. It's after this one. It's Fraxium, who are respectfully very small, wiry men. And they're with Josh Briggs, who's big and tall, and Inamuro, who's big and round. And my mind is kind of boggling that these are all the same species of being on this planet. And as I'm thinking about how different they are, Vic very casually says, there's a lot of similarities between these two teams. And Booker T, speaking on behalf of Vincent Verhey, screams, really? Really?
the similarity is that they're all men.
Explained it and it made sense.
What did he say?
I don't recall.
Exactly. But
something about them potentially being rivals, finding friendship and a common ground and teaming. Like, what? There actually was a similarities story that he was referring to.
God.
Their origin story, if you will.
They're yes, totally different you, sizes. One's been a team for years. One's having their first match together. God.
So Stephanie and Fallon, they were wrestling this whole time.
They were.
Yeah. And the first, like, 4 minutes of this, they did more mat work and grappling than you will see in a month of NXT TV shows. And finally, they do the spot where... Actually, important to note, Stephanie never got her face hump removed. And the crowd is very disappointed. Booker T is very disappointed. And they cut her off. They do the interference spot that Brian hated so much for the heat. Once that started, now it just feels like an NXT match. Choreographed start to finish. Clearly choreographed start to finish. Stephanie makes her comeback, does a springboard high cross and a suplex. Now she gets the face hump and everyone's going crazy. Then they did a spot where... Stephanie goes for the O'Connor roll, the reverse rolling cradle, the reverse sunset flip, whatever you call it. She gets a two count. Fallon kicks out and kicks her forward. JC then punches Stephanie, who does the big nestie plunge bump and falls backward, and Fallon covers her for a two count. I thought, wait a minute. What did the referee think happened? The last time he saw Stephanie, she was making a cover. There was a kick out. Suddenly she's falling backwards into a bump. And he did not think there was interference.
He's an idiot.
So the match continues for a while. Finally, Stephanie takes matters into her own hands, wipes out all three members of a Fatal Influence. I loved, and this happened a couple of times in the show. She is on the floor, Fallon is standing in the apron, and Stephanie throws an elbow strike to the back of the knee to take her down. And does a big dive. The place is going apeshit. Gets her backbreaker, but instead of being a cover, goes up top. It's a corkscrew moonsault. The referee counts three, and Vic screams, she's earned validation! I thought, dude, she's earned a championship. That's more important. Anyway, this is good. It certainly peaked at the right time, but there's something very soulless and mechanical about most NXT matches.
I thought this was a pretty good match, and Fallon appears to be heading up to the main roster, which is why they took the title off of her. And Dave seems to think she has no hope, but like...
Yeah, the woman didn't listen to that show.
Dude, they just added two secondary women's titles. Have you guys been following the secondary women's title on SmackDown?
I'm sure she's on a losing streak.
It's Chelsea.
Both of them just lost in the qualifiers for the chamber.
Yeah, but I mean, Chelsea has been feuding with, like, Meechan. She's had, like, three matches she had with her, and they tease another one. And it's like, she has no challengers whatsoever. So I'm pretty sure that they can do something with Fallon Henley, given we now have four women's titles amongst the two brands. We need women up there.
Mm-hmm. And if that poor woman listened to the show, she may quit the business. Jesus, Dave.
No.
Also, too, just to cement the argument from earlier, and not to throw my friend Booker T under the bus, but he was the one that said she had made a big name for herself in Mexico and is now trying to make a name for herself in North America. Well, apparently being unaware that Mexico is part of North America.
I mean, it's I'm not going to say nothing.
I enjoyed the match. I wasn't honestly expecting much because I don't watch on a weekly basis. I just watch the big shows. That spiral tap that Stephanie does, that thing is beautiful. Like maybe better than Pox, but it's super good.
Remember we were watching the early NXTs and AJ like botched it like for the first 3 months he was doing it.
He does it a little different. He does I think she did.
He does a forward flip.
She did a moonsault full twisting.
Yeah,
and yeah. AJ does a senton full twisting.
Vic called it a spiral tap because he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not very good at his job.
I see.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I just repeated it. So I am also not very good at my job.
Yeah, but he makes more money than you.
Fair.
I'm confident.
You gonna bury Craig any further?
Fraxian versus Josh Briggs and Yoshiki Inamura. So the match was, of course, fun. It is Fraxium, my favorite tag team of the year. They had I love this spot for the Heat was so creative. Fraxium is running wild, and Axiom does like a big kick that drops Inamura to one knee. He's selling. He's here. He's hurt. He's staggered and drops to one knee. But then Axiom turns around, and the big giant Briggs grabs him and chokeslams him onto the knee that Inamura has just taken.
Ooh, yes.
That was awesome.
Well, it was actually even better because right before that, Axiom had tried a kip up, and he kipped up into a boot from Briggs, yeah, and then awesome. Briggs chokeslammed him over the knee.
Yeah.
And then they kind of work over for Axiom for a while, and then they had this spot to set up the hot tag where Inamura is just playing this big bully. He's this big, giant bully, and Axiom is tiny. And so finally, he puts his hand behind his back, and he sticks his chin out, like daring Axiom to hit him. So Axiom leaps in the air and he does his finish, the golden ratio, and he fucking kicked this poor guy right in the fucking neck.
Yeah.
And Inamura sold this like the big redwood falling tree just fell dead on the mat.
I don't think they do kicks to the face in sumo.
Dude, caught him off guard. Place went nuts for that spot and he tagged in Frazier. And Frazier, like he has one problem, which I've mentioned many times. Which is his gimmick is that he is very, very, very fast. But in order to do his gimmick, he has to go very, very, very fast. And when you go that fast, sometimes things get fucked up because either you're going too fast or the other guy can't keep up.
Yep.
He tried a springboard 450, but he slipped because he was going so fast. And he ended up doing just the leg drop portion. Like he figured out in midair, I'm not going to make it around. So he did a leg drop. Fucking dropped his leg right on poor Brooks's face.
Look at his heel. Right
did he mouth. Or did Brooks just sell it?
I'm pretty sure.
Once he was done selling, he didn't put it over at all.
Well, he didn't, but I watched it like multiple times.
I think he worked you.
And I'm pretty sure he got him in the face.
Both of these can be true.
Yes.
He may have caught him in the face, and Briggs, as a professional pro wrestler, made it look more violent than it actually was.
Yes.
Both of these can be true.
I was surprised, though, too, with Booker T on commentary, he didn't call this the springboard Harlem hangover.
Yeah. A chance to put himself over, and Booker T missed it. Yeah. So, yes, they're having to come back. Even before, that was the most obvious problem with Fraser's comeback. There were other spots where Briggs was trying to keep up with him, and it was a battle. Because he's not as fast as Nathan Frazier, because pretty much nobody is. But
how long has Briggs been wearing the Big Daddy Cool Diesel pants?
I noticed that, too. He usually has like the black pants on. The red fringe, I believe, is the first time I've seen them. But, yes, he looked mini Kevin Nash here. Which is still bigger than everybody else.
Yes. Tallest guy in the match, and he's still mini Kevin Nash.
Yes. So, 100 things happened. I was battling to keep up with what was going on. Inamura keeps trying his world's greatest top rope splash, but it kept getting countered one way or another, or he just flat out missed it. And they wipe out Briggs with a moonsault press. They pin Inamura with a missile dropkick high low. There were flaws here, but all in all, I thought it was the usual outstanding Fraxium tag match.
This Inamura has only had a few matches in NXT. Like, he's had some battle royals, and He's always just kind of
third match on TV, I think, counting about a Battle
Royal. Yeah, he's sort of been like fine. I've never been like all that impressed, but he looked great in this match. This was the best Josh Briggs match I've ever seen. And goddamn, Axiom and Nathan Frazier, they were my pick for tag team of the year. Every single match with anybody is always awesome. And this was great.
Yeah, I like the Nomura guy. Like, he's unique.
Yes.
And I think that's an underrated quality in today's wrestling.
Yeah. He's in there. He did more sumo spots in this match than, like, Yokozuna or Rikishi ever did in their careers. They were theoretically doing sumo gimmicks.
Yeah, the crowd was super into that guy. His chops, and he actually at one point does a sumo pose and runs in and does another chop. He got over in this match. It's the first time I've seen him, and he's entertaining as heck.
You know, this was not, Vinny.
Tell me.
Soulless and mechanical.
No. There was soul here. There was soul here. You better example of something of that later in the show. But first, the two teams shake hands, and then the lights go out, and they are attacked by four semi-masked men. And somehow, I have no idea how, but the announcers are able to pick out Dion Lennox, Cutler James, and other, and I quote, PC athletes.
And Zach's words were, we know these performance center athletes.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I don't.
And the crowd is chanting.
I know one of them, the bookworm.
And yeah, barely. And the crowd is chanting, who are you? And that's how it ends. I have seen better debuts, is all I can say.
Was the one guy caught off guard? He didn't even get his shirt all the way on.
You got me.
Okay. The thing I thought was funny is Corey proceeds to name like two or three of them. I think he named three. Said they knows these performance center athletes. And then Vic makes the statement, we don't know their names. I'm like, gosh. Corey just gave me like three or four of them.
Signals got crossed here.
So it's possible Corey knew and this idiot Vic had no clue.
I'm watching this on the Peacock app after the fact, and fast-forwarding the Peacock app is a guessing game. You can't see what you're fast-forwarding through.
Oh, Netflix is like that.
That's
on
why you kind of have to go boom, 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 because then you can kind of see.
Yeah. But so I missed a lot of stuff between matches, but not all of it. We see the Italian restaurant. It appears that Stax is holding court with the entire family. From the way he's speaking, it appears he's talking to a large crew, referencing the royal we and things like this. Can't believe they got played by Sean Spears and his goon squad. He got the drop on the boss. And it's all the fault of that. I promised my mother I wouldn't swear, but it's Izzy bleeping Dame. And he is, of course, bleeped. The boss's back is pretty bad. Spears and his gang will pay for their sins. I'm taking care of this myself. And it zooms out. It turns out he's at the table all alone, talking to himself like a lunatic. Tuesday night, I'm taking the head off the snake. Eddie Thorpe versus Trick Williams in a strap match. Very early in the show, I thought, for Trick.
Well, Trick's another one that
maybe like done.
Yeah, I think he's going to the main roster. Because what's left for Trick is the only thing that would be left would be a one-on-one match with Oba over WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, he ain't losing a strap match to Eddie Thorpe. But he did.
So, yeah.
Clean.
Yeah.
And so I think he's gone. So this was, and I was told that all the big names that were beaten were called up. So yeah. I presume that's what happened here. But man, what a way to go out! He put over a young guy. I mean,
yeah,
he didn't.
This old guy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about, you know, Eddie Thorpe.
He's probably older than Trick. Actually,
he might be, but like he's not who you would think would be like a big NXT star.
When
he's a guy on the rise.
Yeah,
Trick is a much bigger star than Eddie. So he put over a lesser guy on the way out.
When, first of all, they did pinfalls and submissions in this strap match, which
thank God.
I would rather have them do that than touching the corner or whatever.
Yep.
But it was weird to watch. But, yeah, Brian spoiled this. When Eddie gets the pin, not to the same degree as we saw in New Orleans, but it was a similar reaction to when Brock Lesnar pinned The Undertaker at WrestleMania and ended the streak. People were not expecting that. At all. There were audible gasps.
Yeah, people gasped, and you could see guys in the front row just like grab their face like, oh my God, because they were not expecting, and they hated Eddie.
Oh yeah.
They fucking hated this guy, and they loved Trick, and when he low-blowed him and hit that move and pinned him clean, I mean, there were, like, people were gasping. They were screaming. They could not believe that Trick got beaten, and it was a great finish. It was a great moment. And it was a good match.
The match was very simple. They early on, they're not whipping each other at all. They were tying each other up with the strap. They were clobbering each other, but there was very little whipping involved. And like halfway through, Trick's in the apron. Eddie whips him one time, and Trick sells it like a gunshot.
Yes.
He's never felt pain like this before. Then they whip the snot out of each other for 2 or 3 minutes. And Trick's making his comeback.
As the crowd chants, whoop that Trick.
Yeah, it was actually.
Which was an odd. This was as he was getting violently whipped.
He was whipped
chanting, that Trick. Whoop yeah. that Trick.
Yeah. So he hits the Trick knee, but Eddie rolls outside, so there's no pin. Tries another one inside the ring. Eddie ducks it. In the process, the strap ends up between Trick's legs. Eddie yanks it and low blows him.
That's usually a heel move. The heel usually takes that move.
I see. Yes. I was going to say, Eddie is a heel. But Eddie hits something very close to the Bryan Danielson knee strike, gets the win, and like I say, the crowd was shocked.
And I mean, he got the guy with a low blow, but the fact is, this was an anything goes match. There's no DQs. You can you can pull strap and over that it was dude's nuts. That was clean.
Mm-hmm. My one issue with this match, and probably I'm the only guy that notices it because I have this cyborg brain that can't accept little mistakes. When they showed them putting the strap on, it was very clear that it's this big, huge, loose loop that they have to hold on to even keep the strap on them. Like, Trick put it on, and he had just slid it on and then grabbed it, and he opens this gigantic loop to put it on Eddie Thorpe's wrist, and then they proceed to do all these spots where they yank this guy into things and tie him up with stuff. I'm like, they're so having to hang on to this thing so it doesn't fall off. Why did you not come up with a strap that actually attaches to them? Because again, I have a stupid cyborg brain. It's like it ruined the match for me because I'm just like, why are you hanging on to the dumb strap?
Because it's fake, dude.
But it's not supposed to look fake, obviously.
They hit the ropes, brother. It's ridiculous.
Ethan Page versus Javon Evans.
Well, I had a Ricky Starks video promo.
Okay.
Which was, now it's funny. It's like, they go, we saw who debuted this past Tuesday, but they won't say his name.
No.
Let's take a look. He's got a promo for us. And then they go to Ricky, and he cuts his entire promo about how he's going to show up on Tuesday. He's going to sign his NXT contract. Everybody's going to have the absolute truth from the man himself. Not one time does he mention his name. And so to this day, not one single person, aside from the fans, has said the name Ricky Starks. He has now been on TV twice. So I guess Tuesday we'll find out what's his name.
I'm looking forward to the obvious feud of the absolute truth versus R-Truth.
Hey, you could do that. Should be a
like,
quick one.
Like when Booker and what's-his-face fought over the letter T. They can fight over the word truth.
Well, I hope this is better than that.
I do, too. Didn't Booker T lose? It would have
to be.
He did. He was just Booker for a while.
Yeah.
And he got
his T back somehow?
He lost his music. They played like the knockoff Leave It to Beaver theme or something for him for a while.
Oh, boy.
These are all things that happen. I'm not making this up, everyone.
Yeah.
No, you're under 20 years old. I swear to God, this actually happened.
Yes.
Do they really not have a name for the guy yet? Or
I presume they got a name.
I assume they know what they're going to do.
Said it on television.
Kind of weird.
Or social media. It's. I suggested he would be absolute Osiris Griffin, but apparently that name, somebody, whoever has that name trademarked is using it on social media already.
Mm.
So that's
It'll be interesting how they're going to draw up this contract for him to sign if they don't know his name.
That's very true.
Last name here, first name here. So it's Ethan Page and Javon Evans.
Javon, I thought this was a great match.
Javon comes out, and boy, you've never seen a guy make it so obvious. He's putting in a mouthpiece when this thing starts.
Yes.
He looks at this thing. It looks like he weighs 75 pounds. He's holding it there, and he puts it in his mouth and charges in the battle. The very first thing
he
does.
And it is bright, blazing white.
Yes.
It looks like
William Regal putting on the brass knucks.
It looks like five times the size of a normal mouthpiece. Like his mouth is like as wide as like a snake eating
He looked like Jaws.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I got it. You got a mouthpiece in, brother.
Yeah. He immediately throws Ethan out of the ring. Goes for a dive and overshoots his target to a degree you will rarely see.
Yeah, but goddamn, this Ethan Page did everything in his power to still. He leaped. He was like he was jumping in for like to catch a football. He leaped in and grabbed this guy out of midair, and the guy still flew past him and crashed.
By the ankles.
Wiped out all the announcers.
Like, God,
I thought everyone was dead.
I gotta give Ethan a lot of credit. That fucker tried. Dude, he tried his best.
Ethan was awfully great in this match.
Yeah, he is.
And Javon's great, and everyone's into him. And this is a Javon we haven't seen before. This is angry, pissed off, out for blood Javon Evans. He's doing the ground and pound on the table, and people are going crazy for this savage brawling. He tears Ethan apart and can't get the ass cutter. He goes to stomp Ethan's face in the stairs, break his jaw like Ethan did to him, but Ethan dodges, hits the back of the knee like Stephanie did earlier, and kicks the stairs into the ankle. The announcers, to their credit, helpfully point out that's just what he did to Dante Chen, too. So he spends the whole match working over the leg, not the jaw, like everyone expected. And Javon makes his comeback. He wins a one-legged strike exchange. He's limping all over, doing a big limping dive. It was still a big limping dive, even though he did that. And he gets a stomp to the jaw, and feels like he's got, you know, he's gotten his revenge now. Just hit his move and win. But he tries this ass cutter, and Ethan hits a perfect punch to the jaw in midair.
It really was. I mean, he punched that guy.
And that mouthpiece, all 75 pounds of it goes flying out of there.
Triple reinforced, according to wow. Vic Joseph. The fuck does that even mean?
Well, it's like double secret probation.
God.
And then Ethan grabbed him, and he hit a twist of fate. And then he pinned him.
Yeah.
What?
He hit him in the fucking bad mouth. He sent the mouthpiece flying. The doctor even said if that guy gets hit in the face, his career could end.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I first heard about this, like, people were thinking I was just going to fucking lose my shit. But, mm-hmm. Dude, it's February. We got to have something big over Mania weekend. It ain't going to be Trick beating Oba.
No.
So, like, who's going to get a big fucking win on that show? And it looks like Javon Evans, Ethan Page, some sort of stip match, and Javon's going to get his big win. And hopefully when he does, it'll be like, time to get in line for that title. So I didn't mind the finish at all, especially because it looked so awesome. When he punched that thing out of his mouth, fucking went flying like Halley's Comet. I enjoyed this. Good, simple, basic story.
I thought this was brilliant. Like, the idea that you've cleared a guy to have a match where if he gets hit in the jaw once, his career could be over is ridiculous. But they did such a fantastic job of never having a moment where Ethan could or felt like he should be able to hit him in the mouth and end it. Like, they did a really great job. Like, the beginning with Javon just killing him was great. And there was even a couple times where Ethan would throw a swing and miss the jaw. And then by doing the ankle, it didn't feel weird that, okay, now he's got heat on him. Why wouldn't he just punch him in the jaw? It's like they gave you something to shoot for. And by Javon constantly trying to shimmy on his butt to get away from Ethan, the ankle was always more available than the jaw. So, like, they never had that issue of, dude, why didn't you just punch him in the jaw and end this already?
And,
like,
Lance,
it was brilliant.
And the working the leg wasn't just something that came out of nowhere. That was something that Ethan Page had done to Cedric Alexander, who was Javon's partner until he got cut. After he injured Javon, Cedric came to, like, have the match with Ethan to, you know, revenge for Javon. And Ethan ends up beating him, and then he put the foot in between the steps and the post and stomped it and destroyed the guys. I think he might have done his wrist or whatever. But the point was, they'd built this up on earlier shows, the same spot. So it wasn't just like something that came out of nowhere to avoid the mouth.
Yeah, this was just brilliant, brilliant storytelling. Loved this. I would have split up the shock pinning clean of two of your top baby faces on a show. It was a big chunk of no fun in the middle as far as finishes went, but this was a brilliant match.
So, as stated, I don't watch the weekly NXT, and the only thing I knew about Javon Evans is that Brian Alvarez absolutely loves him and fawns all over himself and Javon when he's talking about him. Brian, this kid's great.
Thank you. I was right.
He's freaking great. The kid's got hops. His flying is perfect. He's you can't take your eyes off him. He's awesome.
How was it?
Vinny will attest to this. How about the NXT TNA crossover of Javon and Leon Slater?
The parallels are mighty strong.
Yes.
they look the same. They work the same. Leon's push is more recent, but yes, they are brothers from different mothers, whatever the saying is.
Let's get them an Fraxium together.
Yes, please. I would pay to see that. That sounds awesome. So Javon, of course, is spitting up blood again. He's been punched in the jaw. We were all warned about this. And prayers for Javon Evans. Sarah Schreiber interviews Stephanie Vaccour. Yes, she is North American champion, but her night is not over. She's going to stay to watch the main event, which is the first time I realized that the women's four-way for the title was the main event of the show. Although it should have been obvious by the next match, which is Oba Femi.
Honestly,
versus,
you know,
Grayson versus Austin.
When I looked at the lineup for the show, it was like, all right, well, the women's match is probably going to be a much better match, so that match should close the show. But in hindsight, having watched the show now, this match should have closed the show.
Yep.
Because this was a better match. It had a better story. I thought everybody... I did not... Here's the thing. When they shot the angle for this show on Tuesday, when it was over, I was like, man, I don't give a fuck. I do not care about this match. Like, who cares? But the story that they told of Grayson and Austin have been, you know, a tag team forever. They've been kind of half-assed teasing a breakup on and off for a fucking full year. The fans are begging for Austin Theory to turn on Grayson Waller. They both clearly want the title, but they're going to, like, work together. But you can see that they're pissing each other off because they both want this title. Oba Femi's in there facing two guys, but these two guys, while they can work together, they still have problems. And I thought the story they told from start to finish, I was like, this totally over-delivered from what I was expecting here in this match. I thought everybody here did a great job.
The only thing I didn't like is they focused more on that story than they did on the match.
Good!
Okay.
If you did, just a three-way with these geeks without that story, like Theory and Waller just having a rando three-way with Oba Femi, it couldn't possibly have been this good. This had to be about the story, and I thought they did a great job with the story.
See, I hate multi-person matches, especially the handicap where the two underdogs are like partners, because to me it just ruins the whole match. Like, I didn't realize that they didn't get along because I don't watch the show regularly. Mm-hmm. But even still, if two guys that look like they don't, and in storyline, they don't have a hope in hell of beating this guy. If this were real, it's like, why wouldn't they just flip a coin ahead of time, decide who's going to win, and the second they started getting Oba selling in the beginning of the match, one of them just grabs the other guy submits, and Oba loses the title, and they don't have to fight this big guy. Like, as soon as they tell you the champion doesn't have to be involved in the finish, it's like, then who fucking cares?
Right.
Like,
well, they did that spot early where they end up sending Oba outside, and then Theory and Waller, they kind of look at each other for a second because they're alone in the ring, and Grayson's like, lay down. And Theory's like, I ain't fucking laying down. So, I mean, they weren't... You have to watch the show. They weren't fighting. Like, they were a team. They'd won matches as a team. They were working together as a team. But every time it was brought up, you guys realize that at some point, one of you is going to have to be the champion if you take out Oba. They would each kind of get like, well, you know, it's going to be me. And then the other guy's like, well, you know, we'll see what happens in the match. You could see that, like, something was going to go down, but the idea was they were still working together.
But even to that, there was the spot where they were on the floor and Theory throws Oba in, goes for the cover. And then when, like, Oba kicks out, like, what's his face? Waller gets up on the floor, like, what were you doing? It's like, what do you think he was fucking doing? He was trying to win the match. Did you not realize he might try to pin the champion in this match? Like, it's just stupid. I hate three ways when it's a one fall. I hate a match that's designed where a dominant champion could lose his title and not even be involved in it. Like, just the concept's bad. I hate them.
I thought they did this very well, because the other thing about it, and they had a lot of spots like this, is they are apparently going to split. And from the moment they appeared...
You've been saying this for a year now.
Well, from the moment they appeared on NXT TV, like, the fans... And part of this was because they were in his hometown, but the fans have been chanting, turn on Grayson and Austin Theory on every show. And so they've figured out, and I think it's been like this for a while, because, you know, when they were teasing a breakup on TV months ago, it was always Theory that was positioned as the babyface. So in this match, Theory was positioned as the babyface. He was the guy that was, okay, I'm going to try to win. If I get a chance to make a cover, I will. Whereas Grayson was the one that was like, no, if you try to make a cover, I'm going to pull the referee out of the ring. I'm going to get upset about it. And
Theory
he did.
Had a visual pin over Obafemi.
Yes.
I was dumbfounded. They pinned Trick clean. They pinned Javon clean and then gave Theory a visual pin over Oba back to back to back. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Well, two of them are leaving, but.
Well, I like this match a lot more than Lance did. I love the opening because Grayson Waller, whose whole gimmick is that he's a social media person, he shares online a picture of the DX versus John Cena three-way from Survivor Series and just says film study. And if you recall, the very first spot in that match, the bell rings and Sean super kicks Hunter right in the mouth, his alleged partner. And so this match starts in the exact same position and the bell rings and Grayson turns to Theory, but then stops and super kicks the other way, super kicks Oba right in the mouth, says, let's get him. They start double-teaming him. Every time where it looked like Grayson and Awesome were finally going to throw down and attack each other, every single time, Oba broke it up because, no, he wants to fight them both together. He wants them to work together so he can kill them both at the same time because he's a goddamn monster and a giant. And when they tried to do the Doomsday device and he sprung to life atop Theory's shoulders and Grayson's on the top rope screaming in fear, and Oba's like, no, you're coming with me. And he grabs him and suplexes him down. That was awesome. And just a bunch of other fun stuff. And technically, A-Town Down never intentionally, either one of them, hit each other. They bonked each other a few times. They pulled the ref out to break up pins. They didn't even break up pins, but they stopped each other from winning. And Oba looks like he's going to pin Theory with the fall from grace. But here comes Grayson with the rolling stunner. Oba sees him coming, dodges. Waller accidentally stunners Theory, and so Oba pins Waller with a fall from grace. Crowd was chanting, this is awesome. I thought it was awesome. I thought the champ was put over strong. I thought it was wins all around.
And they pin Grayson, so he's going to show up on the next show, and he's going to be all furious because he got beaten in this match, and he's going to blame his partner, and I presume this is a WrestleMania match on one of the nights.
And the lights go out, the music stops, and those four dudes appear in the ring again, and they're beating up Oba. They hit a four-man shield powerbomb, so they're assaulting all the champions, apparently.
Mm.
And this is also why Brian is wrong. This shouldn't have been the main event of the show, because it would just be a downer end of the show, as opposed to having Julia, Stephanie, and the You beat Trick clean, you beat Javon clean. Don't send them home unhappy at the end of the night, too. Well, Jesus Christ.
The bigger thing is, I don't see any reason these nerds needed to attack Obafemi. I know why they did, but you could have done it on television. You could have ended the show on Tuesday doing it. It didn't have
to
be done tonight.
To be clear, the match, as far as the wrestling, I enjoyed enough. I just hate the psychology of three ways with one fall.
You guys know why they attacked Oba?
No clue.
I assume because they attacked the tag champions.
No, Vinny, you idiot. We even talked about this. They had that idiot segment.
That seems harsh.
You'll understand in a second. They had that segment that we both loved where Obafemi was walking backstage on NXT television and the fucking bookworm stops him. And he goes, someday I'll be challenging for that title. And Obafemi doesn't say a word, but his eyes grow wide as if to say, in your dreams.
Yeah, his eyes went wide. He stared at him for a little bit and very slowly turned and walked on.
Like, who the fuck is this dork?
Yeah.
Well,
he's a dork with the other dork friends.
He found out who this fucking dork was here.
I guess so.
He got his revenge.
Yeah, that does not make me an idiot. You went over the line.
Shut up.
Roxanne Perez versus Cora Jade versus Julia versus Bailey.
Wait, hold on. Before that, Ava said, we're in Cincinnati on Tuesday. Ava is unaware that Brian Pillman Jr. is from Cincinnati.
What?
Yeah. She goes, I didn't even know Brian Pillman Jr. was from Cincinnati, or whatever his fucking name is.
Boy, she's great at her job.
So then Ariana Grace returns, and she is the, quote, NXT liaison at TNA.
Yeah.
She says, Ava, I must introduce you to somebody. It is the return of Santino Marella.
Mm-hmm.
And Ava says, I have some ideas to discuss with you, Santino. And I thought, how the fuck is that not next PLE? Can you imagine that fucking thing?
Just 3 hours of Ava and Santino.
3 hours
sharing
of
ideas.
Fucking Santino and Ava. Oh my God. Just like booking the next few house shows or whatever. Oh my God. God.
So the main event is Roxanne Perez versus Cora Jade versus Julia versus Bayley.
So as I said, when I looked at the lineup, I was like, this should be a good match, okay? It should be the best match on the show. This was before Tuesday's TV when they added Cora Jade. They added Cora Jade, and I was like, God damn it. I thought this match would be great. Cora Jade's going to get added. She's going to fuck the whole thing up. As it turns out, I can't say that she was, like, great.
She was fine.
But she did not fuck the match up.
No.
The person who fucked this match up, of all people, was Bayley. Dude, she fucked up one spot after another. There was like a half dozen spots in this match that got fucked up, and there was one person involved in all six of those, and it was Bayley of all people. I couldn't even believe my eyes.
It was definitely the worst parts were Bayley versus Julia, which I would not have expected coming in.
Yes. Like, yes.
The biggest feud was Bayley versus her bootlaces.
May not have helped. I think Cora and Roxanne broke up and reunited like three times in the course of this match. It's never really clear. Listen, they did a four-way. There was a bunch of stuff going on.
I'll say.
It was pretty random. Largely meaningless. Some of it looked cool. Some of it looked like we got a few don't know what that was. It was ugly but effective on commentary.
And, we had Vic Joseph repeatedly calling her Generation of Jade. If I hear that one more fucking time.
And after a bunch of stuff, they do a Tower of Doom spot. The place is going nuts. I should point this out. The crowd loved this match.
That's the get out of jail free spot. No matter what goes wrong, you do a stacked up stupid plex. The crowd will chant, this is awesome.
And I always love when the person at the bottom hits the power bomb and then sells.
Yes.
What's happened here?
It's taken so much out of her.
Actually, I don't think it did, because I think the person on the bottom was...
It was Cora.
Cora, yeah. And then she immediately went for a cover, because she was the only one that didn't get hurt.
She slumped in the corner for a second or two, then popped up and made a cover.
Well, it was a lot of energy to powerbomb three people.
Who are standing on the ropes.
Stacked up superplex spot, yeah.
So Roxanne got pop rocks on Bayley in and out of the ring, but Cora cuts her off with the DDT, but Julia cuts Cora off with a running knee, which is apparently called a rivaderci. Was they never explained on TV or even mentioned that she's Italian?
Yeah.
And then another arrivederci on Roxanne, I think, and hit Roxanne with a Northern Lights bomb and pinned her. This was a lot of stuff.
It was. I thought it was the weakest match on the show. It wasn't like it was bad, but I thought every other match was better. And we didn't need a three-way and a four-way, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, they pin Roxanne because she's actually in a chamber qualifier on Raw, so she's called up, which is good. And then they had to stare down with Stephanie, Jordan Grace, and Julia. So we might have another multi-person match coming up for the WrestleMania weekend show.
Yeah.
At least we know Jordan's name.
She is Jordan Grace.
That's for sure.
And they even use the juggernaut, so they're keeping it all, it seems.
Keeping the music?
Yeah.
I'm surprised, honestly, that she's starting NXT. But I will say, when they were out there with these belts and looking at each other, and the fans went absolutely hog wild when Jordan came out. And all she was come out and stare at them. There was no, you know, overt challenge or attack or anything. They just had a stare down. But they have been claiming for a long time now that their women's division is the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And I've watched it and I thought, no, it's the deepest. You have the most names available. But now, with these three, they may actually have the best women's division in the world.
Well, I don't know about the world, because you've got, like, Star and Marigold, but
it's closer to true now than it's ever been before.
As far as a company that has men's and women's divisions, so, like, you know, New Japan and AEW and WWE, Raw, SmackDown, this one is the best, I would say. NXT.
Notice how you skipped over a company there,
well,
Brian.
Well, TNA, I mean. Well, half the TNA women are in NXT.
Vice versa, actually. NXT women. They have NXT women on...
Yeah, you guys got Cora Jade, so I'm going to take NXT for the win. So what do you think, Lance? What do you think of NXT?
Again, I liked this show a lot more than I liked the television show, because you don't get a lot of the... At least I didn't, because I skipped between matches as well. But a lot of the silly skits that I'm not a fan of, the more lightheartedness, but when you just get the wrestling... On the whole, it was good. Again, I don't like three and four ways. They don't emotionally invest me. But on the whole, I thought the opener was really good. The tag was very solid. And I loved, to me it was the best match on the show, was Javon and Ethan, because the story was fantastic and the wrestling was good.
You know, this fella here on the chat pie makes an absolutely excellent point. And that is that if you are listening to this right now and you're thinking, oh my God, these guys are idiots, NXT doesn't have the best women's division. The fact of the matter is, NXT books their women as if they have the best women's division in the world. They treat them, I mean, if you watch an NXT TV show, if they have three men's matches, they probably have three women's matches. I'm sure we've had NXT TV shows with more women's matches than men. I mean, they do treat it like it is the best women's division in the world. And if you go through the NXT quarters, the women regularly do some of the best quarters, often the best quarters. And it's the same thing actually with Raw and SmackDown now. I mean, they are booking their women's divisions like they are important. And the women, I mean, they move numbers. So, you know, it's always been a thing with AEW where, you know, Tony will give, you know, he'll put over Tony, he'll put over Mariah, but in general, it's like he doesn't think they're going to draw, so he doesn't push them. And it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, things are going to draw if you make them seem important. You can convince people that things are important. And that's what WWE, and in particular NXT, has done with the women's division.
Not to be a shill here, but TNA also books their knockouts division extremely strong. They quite often main event pay-per-views. Vinny can attest to the Jordan Grace, Masha Slamovich from... Was it Bound for Glory?
Two, three months back, they had an incredible match. Yeah.
They main event frequently and have been an important part of TNA and Impact before that for quite a while. And again, others can judge which is better, but we book our division quite strong too.
I wouldn't say anything at all negative about TNA, but I mean...
Well, you don't watch it.
Well, the big difference is... it's not only that, Lance. I don't get any quarters for TNA, so I have no idea who does well and who doesn't. But I can say from looking at the WWE and the AEW quarters, the promotions that push the women hard, their women do good numbers. And the promotion that does not push their women hard, their women do not do good numbers. So there's yes.
So you're saying if you push a segment like it's important, people might actually watch it.
Yeah, that's the fucking point of promoting, in fact. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Australia. Lance, you can stick around if you want to.
Actually, it's getting late. I'd rather run out and listen to this in the morning.
All right, why don't you give your plugs? Lance is on TNA, guys. You know that?
Mm-hmm.
And AEW.
Not on it. Yeah.
We are live this coming Thursday again. Not tape show. Live Thursday.
And the last live one went off without a hitch. Yeah. And then they are from Full Sail. Last live show went off. We were debating whether anything would go wrong. Nothing serious went wrong. So let's do it again.
I was in the camp of it's going to go off fine, I'd like to add. And it did.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have another one coming from Full Sail. We're taping a few weeks, but we're doing Thursday live. So check us out, Access TV in the U.S. and Sportsnet 360 now in Canada.
It's Joe Hendry and Jake something, right? I think it's the main event this week. No, that just happened.
That just happened.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm a week behind.
Yes, you'll be reviewing
that. Thank God you're here, Vinny, as the voice of TNA for this website.
Yes, brilliant.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Lance, see you later. Go to bed. Get out of here, brother. Red 5. All right. What do we got now?
We also watched AEW Grand Slam Australia, which is the official title of the show.
Also an excellent show.
February 15th, 2025. Yeah. It did start off. They had a much bigger crowd and a fancier set, but it just felt like any other collision otherwise. We did not get the opening video with stock footage of beaches or Vegemite or wallabies. There's no shot of the... Brisbane's got like a big Ferris wheel, a big bridge, or Bluey, none of that. Tony didn't spring for Men at Work or In Excess. Just any other Saturday Night Wrestling show, just bigger and better, which is good.
You know, AC/DC's from there as well, right?
Have you listened to the music Tony picks for his...
That's fair.
Elton John and the Pointer Sisters are his wheelhouse.
Every time I promoted this as a collision show, I would have blowback. People would get so mad. It's not a collision! It's Grant! I was like, dude, it's a collision. It's in the collision time slot. It's called collision. Well, the show was over, and it was collision, everybody. It's great collision! This is four shows in a row that I thought have been pretty much excellent.
They have.
Last Wednesday's show was kind of a little bit on the line, but this one was great.
And Vinny, just to
not debate anything you said, but the fact that the crowd was a lot bigger made it feel a little bit more special.
Sure.
Even though it was just a collision.
I'd rather have a big hot crowd than a small hot crowd.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. Opener. And the best thing in the show. Kenosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher versus Will Ospreay and Kenny Omega.
Goodness.
Like, my only negative here is that Kenny came out to his final fantasy opera music again. And man, it just doesn't work. It
fucking sucks, dude. I couldn't believe he came out to that.
He comes out and gets like, it's like golf clap.
Yeah. The music sucks.
And then they realize it's Kenny and they start chanting his name. But
and it's funny because it was like he figured it out because he went back to his other music and then he just brought it back here.
Yeah.
I got to talk about the ring. Oh. So this was not an AEW ring. They got a ring from somebody local or whatever. And I thought it was 18 by 18. Buddy Matthews 16. Said it was 16 by 16.
Good
Lord. Which I'm not sure if that's true. Like, I wasn't in the ring and he was, but 16 by 16 is fucking small. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it was a smaller ring and it was very bouncy. And I watched it and I thought, I'd be thrilled. Like, a smaller ring. Like, that's one of the things about the WCW Cruiserweight division when WWE tried to do Cruiserweights as well. It was like the WCW action was always faster because the ring was smaller. You could take the same guys and put them in the WWE ring, and their matches would be inherently slower because the ring was bigger. So there's a benefit to having a smaller ring, and I'm always good with like a real good bouncy ring. It's good for taking bumps. But there is a negative, and that is that apparently sometimes boards pop up. And Buddy claimed that that's how he injured his ankle. A board popped up. And there were people complaining about the ring. And, you know, it's just, I don't think they should have gone online to complain about it. Just what's done is done. But that's what happened.
Well, I can tell you as a viewer, I never even realized it was an unusual AEW ring.
It was.
The size of the
bounce. It was small and bouncy.
None of it stood out to me. So I
just like Javon Evans.
He's very small.
He's skinny.
He is skinny. That's true.
Yeah, it made the crowd look bigger.
That's true, actually.
They should do a one-by-one ring in those small buildings.
So this match ruled.
Yeah,
it was very much a party match. There's not really a point to recap move by move or anything.
They did every move ever.
Man, some I've never seen before.
Except a headlock, oddly enough.
Yeah. I think my favorite part was just Kenny Omega tries the "you can't escape," and Fletcher immediately slips off, and he's so happy, he shouts, "I can't escape!"
I was so hoping that he would not escape, as in he would escape, but then still get hit with it somehow.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
No. So, they did everything. Everything. There was a point where Kenny tried to poison Rana, and somebody, and somehow both guys fell on their heads.
Oh my gosh.
That was not so good. But we had Stereo Tombstones for Stereo 3 count by the heels. Everyone hits a finish or 3, I wrote. And, an assisted brainbuster, and they tried another one.
This is one of those matches that you just need to watch.
Yeah.
We can sit here and tell you a bunch of moves,
yeah,
but I think when you do that, you give ammunition to these idiots that say all they do is moves. This was not all about moves, but it was a long match, and they had a lot of really awesome sequences. They had a lot of really awesome spots, and in the end, we had a dive by Will Ospreay over Takeshita and the top turnbuckle post to the floor, which the camera completely missed again. And then we had a hidden blade, one winged angel combo. And
you are really glossing over the last one. The two most dangerous finishes in AEW at the same time.
Yes.
And it was the finish.
And Kenny Omega pinned Takeshita.
Yeah.
So we've got a title match coming. Kenny Omega and Takeshita at the pay-per-view, which should be fucking incredible.
There was at one point Kenny was going to do the one winged angel off the top rope, but the Kyle managed to not actually get free, but Will saw this happening and he jumped off the other rope and hit him with a cutter for an avalanche cutter from
Kenny's shoulders.
From Kenny's shoulders.
Yes.
And it was not even a near fall.
Yes. So when this was done,
I will say one other thing. Okay. I presume this is on purpose because he's a smart guy. Maybe it's just a wild coincidence, but I'm skeptical. So this was a long match, like I said. I don't know how long it went, 18 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. Long time. And there was they did all these crazy moves, And then, you know, there was a period where they kept going and, you know, the crowd, they'd been going nuts for 16 minutes. So they started to kind of slow down a little bit. And anytime that Don Callis is on commentary and you can hear the crowd start to kind of die down a little bit, he gets up.
Ah.
And this fucking crowd, they get so angry, they start screaming at him, and he gets the heat back just by standing up. If they get really quiet, he like goes to ringside, and then they're like really going nutty. But I was watching this, and there was a period where they got quiet, and he stood up, and then they weren't quiet no more. And I was like, very clever.
All right, I'm going to say it. Don's a genius.
Yeah, don't put the guy over.
Don't let him know that.
We got enough problems.
Yeah. Anyway, this is done. I was exhausted in a good way. Absolutely absurd athletic spectacle here. Harley Cameron versus Mercedes Moné. They show Momo Watanabe at ringside and remind us all she has won the International Women's Cup. She gets a title shot at any title of her choosing, we are told. Perhaps she will join Charlotte and Tiffy in a three-way at Mania. So Harley runs wild early, including giving Mercedes what I can only describe as a savage motorboating, and then busts up Mini Moné, the puppet, which she attempts to use. Mercedes dodges and kicks some puppet ass and hits a meteor for two. We go to break, and Harley makes a comeback. She's knocked out of the ring, but then she and Mini Moné both rise from the dead to fight back. The puppet is a foreign object, really.
It really is.
It is cheating. Crossbody and Australian Destroyer get two for Harley, and a cradle for two, but Mercedes turns into a powerbomb. Harley's coming back with the area code kick. Puts Mercedes down, and Harley and the crowd realize, oh my god, I've just put Mercedes down. I'm right here to climb on the top rope. This is my shot! But she hesitates, gives Mercedes time to recover, misses a senton. Mercedes hits a moneymaker and wins. I don't know if you guys ever knew this. Mercedes Moné is incredibly good at pro wrestling.
Well, she's, you know, awesome. It's funny you mention that because I'm a fair man.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very critical of Mercedes in the past. I did think for a long time she was not as good as everyone said she was. I thought that she's good, but like people talk about she's the best female wrestler in the world, this and that. It's like, she's not. I mean, she has really good matches, but she's also having great opponents and she takes ragdoll bumps. And I had a lot of problems. And she's a fucking horrible babyface, okay? That I will not walk back on. She's terrible as a babyface.
You're right.
But
you're right.
She turned heel. And it took her a while to get going in AEW, but I would say the last, I don't know, 9 months, year, she has been fucking great. And this match, this was Harley's best match ever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just because, hey, we're, you know, here in front of all these people in her home country. It was a legitimately good match.
Mm-hmm.
And Harley is better than she should be, given how long she's been doing this.
Yeah.
But this was her best match by miles. And it was Mercedes. And she did an excellent, excellent job in this match with Harley. And my only criticism, because I am a fair man, is that her fucking finisher sucks.
Yep.
And it sucks to the point now where I believe that it is now part of her heel shtick. She is a heel. She knows people hate this fucking move, and so she's going to keep doing it. I have no other logical explanation for it. It looked like shit here. It looks like shit every single time she does it. I don't think I've seen her do it one time where it didn't look like shit, but she keeps doing it. So it's got to be part of the gimmick.
Yeah, to echo Brian, I was really good. I was really happy to see Moné do so well with Harley. She made her look really good. And people were kind of ticked off that Harley didn't win, but it's not time yet.
We had talked about this, Brian and I, on the Dynamite review, whether or not Harley should win here, and she didn't. And I was fine with it here, but they did not announce it, I don't think, during this show, but they have since announced they're going to return to Australia.
Okay.
She has to win a belt at one of those ones.
Well, you know what? I'd had her win here. Because, really? Yep, because here's the problem. Everybody knew that Mercedes was going to win. Everybody always knows who's going to win in AEW. Because Tony will not actually, he never will change plans, okay? If he's got a plan, he's just going to do it. Because the people brought up like, oh, but Private Party, That's different, okay? That's different. The Young Bucks were going to lose the titles, okay? There were several teams in contention, and because he was so impressed with the first Young Bucks match with Private Party, he decided that Private Party was the team. But it wasn't like Young Bucks had a long reign planned, and he put the brakes on it to have somebody... Somebody else was going to win, he just chose them. But Mercedes, I don't know what his long-term deal is, but he was not going to do it. And because everybody always knows who's going to win these matches, I thought, you know what? She got over organically. It's Australia. I mean, who gives a shit? It doesn't fucking matter. Let her win. Make a star in one night. Build the market in one night. And if you want to beat her at the next pay-per-view or maybe wait till May or whatever, put it back on Mercedes, great. But you should have just, you should have done it here.
Well, to quote Deep Purple, it's not the kill, it's the thrill of the chase. So I think down the road it'll be time.
So Mercedes taunts Momo with a belt. Momo takes it in stride. Doesn't attack her, but just remind us all that she may challenge Mercedes down the road. Omega and Ospreay do a promo where they each issue challenges for Revolution. As Brian noted, Omega is challenging Takeshita to an international title match because he noted, Takeshita, you have pinned me twice, but I just pinned you. Or you've pinned me, now I've pinned you. Yeah, you have pinned me twice. Let's see if you can beat me three times. Ospreay notes that even in Australia, your own country, Kyle Fletcher was not cheering for you, which is true. They booed him passionately. They were cheering for babyface Billy. Fletcher, let's lock your family members out. We'll be locked in inside a steel cage. And one of the reasons this show felt like such a big deal coming in was because they set up a card early and then spent weeks promoting it. Now they're doing it again for Revolution. We already have a title match, two title matches, because we have Omega and Takeshita, and a steel cage match. Those are big matches. This is much better than what they've done over the past year or two, whatever it's been. John Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli versus Adam Copeland and Jay White.
So this was a Brisbane brawl, okay?
Yeah.
And that means you can wear whatever, you know, street fight. But Claudio's out there in, like, sweatpants and this, like, just white shirt.
Yeah.
And so I had people that were, like, messaging me, did they lose his luggage? Because he's in his pajamas. And so, because I am a journalist, I asked. And the answer was, he's just European.
I see.
Well, he is.
That's what he wears.
That is factual.
That, yeah. In fact, was his gear. So.
So the best part of this match is actually before the thing starts. Copeland's music ends, and the crowd just keep this whole big, damn hot crowd is singing for a long time, the whole chorus. And Shivani, who's a pro, just lays back, let it happen. And Copeland's in the ring. Keep in mind, not that long ago, this guy was forced into retirement for a long time, and no one thought he would ever come back. And he's like choking up and then laughing about all this. This is one of the coolest things I've seen on a wrestling show all year. And yes, I know it's only February. Shut up.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was absolutely beautiful.
So the other great thing here is not one single fan chanted for a table before or after the table got involved in this match. Just make it Australian elite wrestling. I'd be fine with that now. So they are brawling all over the place. Adam Copeland just came back from breaking his leg jumping off a high thing.
Yeah, what's this guy thinking?
Jumps off a high thing.
Yeah.
It's not as high, and he had Claudio on his feet there to catch him and break his fall. But I was baffled. This man is a true lunatic. Thankfully, he is fine. And they do a bunch of stuff, and the whole Death Riders get involved, Marina's involved, Wheeler Yuta's involved, and Pack is out there stuff doing stuff. And the baby faces, who, when I mentioned Switchblade and Edge would be a great name for a team, I'll credit Lance, even though he's gone. Lance pointed out to me, you just call them Cutlery. Great name for a tag team. Cutlery is running wild, overcoming all of the odds. And Claudio has the neutralizer. I don't thank God Cope kicks out, because I thought that was actually a great near fall. And I thought there's no way Cope should be losing this match. And suddenly, Mox gets the bulldog choke on Copeland and is choking him out. The other four or five people are all choking out Jay White, so he can't save. The crowd's chanting Copeland's name, and he fires up and fires up and simmers off and fires down and goes to sleep, and the referee stops the match.
I was flabbergasted.
Are you kidding me?
Flabbergasted at this finish.
He is challenging a Revolution. Mox just beat him in the center of the ring with his move.
Yes. astonished.
He couldn't, like, pin Claudio and then get choked out?
The only thing that I can figure is that they want you to think that if you buy the pay-per-view, Copeland is going to beat Moxley, which I don't think is going to happen. Nor do I think it should happen, because the way they've built this up, Moxley's got so much heat that the guy that beats him needs to be somebody who's going to carry this company forward. Hangman or Osprey, Omega. But God bless Copeland. He's 50 and he's not the future of this company. And he's not the guy that should be beating Jon Moxley. And so I think that's why they did this. I can't imagine he's winning. I just can't.
Even if he is, it would be better for the story if he went in as a strong challenger than was a strong champion.
Well, I know, man. I was shocked.
And then, just to really rub it in, Jon Moxley then plays the part of Mariah May. He's nothing. That's what I'm supposed to be scared of, like it's a joke. I am so much less interested in that championship match than I was before the show aired. That baffled me. The match was very good. They had a very good intense brawl. The finish, swerve for the sake of a swerve, bullshit.
Well, we still have many, many weeks left. I mean, at some
point, like free.
He could pin Moxley at some point between now and then. But I was stunned by this finish. I was actually stunned, which is rare.
Buddy Matthews versus Kazuchika Okada. I watched this yesterday. I'm reviewing it here, not even 24 hours later. I have forgotten almost everything they did, except...
Really?
Except Buddy Matthews kicked out of a Rainmaker.
That's mm-hmm. true.
That blew me away.
See, the thing is, like, I watched a million Okada matches in New Japan, and this happened in every big match. But apparently, no one has ever kicked out of the single Rainmaker here in
all of the rest of
AEW. I didn't even
and
think
And whatever has happened in the past, they have made it clear it's going to be Omega versus Okada again at All In. You would think that between now and then, they would do everything they can to make both men look invincible.
Well, you can do an Okada match where guys kick out of the Rainmaker because he normally does a spot where he hits the one Rainmaker but doesn't let go of the wrist. And then he's setting up for another one. And he said, I mean, in his big matches in New Japan, it was almost always multiple Rainmakers as a finish and not just the single Rainmaker. So I didn't have a problem with this. I thought this was on a scale of 1 to 10. If Okada in the Tokyo Dome is a 10 and Okada in AEW is usually about a 3.
Charitably.
This was a solid 6. I mean, he worked.
That's fair.
He half jumped off the top
rope. I describe this as a good TV match.
Yeah, I don't even know how to explain a half jump because he didn't fall. He kind of just jumped off 1 foot.
Exactly. He raised his right leg and like went on tiptoes on his left.
And people booed.
And then fell.
Because they have now recognized that we're not getting the real Okada on the matches where he just falls off the top rope. But I mean, seriously, this was a much better than usual Okada performance. Buddy worked his ass off, even though he hurt his ankle before the match even started. And the fans were super into it. And I thought it was a really good match. Although the ending with the one Rainmaker was anticlimactic. The low blow and the single Rainmaker. I thought it was kind of just... That came out of nowhere.
I don't know. If you would have announced this match 4 years ago, I'd have been way more excited to watch it.
That's the kind of a key. They've
It was there.
They have neutered, to a degree, Okada. And yeah. Need to make him godlike again. He was not godlike here.
No.
But I also should point out that as Murphy was, or Matthews, excuse me, was getting his near falls at the end, including a move called Murphy's Law, which is what I...
It was actually Nigel, as the move is happening, is in the middle of screaming Murphy's Law.
Yeah.
When Tony Schiavone screams over him, Matthew's Law! He got a correction in.
He did the Rhea Ripley, I forget what she calls it, but it's this...
Prison lock.
Prism lock, that's yes.
Yeah, people went nuts for that. Yeah,
an homage of sorts, Nigel points out, without explaining who it was an homage to. But that was fun, and they teased a few ref bumps, and Okada hit a low blow and a Rainmaker and won.
It is kind of funny, because like, it sometimes, and I don't know, this is a weird company, you know what I'm saying?
In many ways.
MJF, when he does his promos, I mean, he has no issue whatsoever acknowledging Cody Rhodes when he does a promo with Dustin. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, he talks about your brother and this and that. But like here, they will not acknowledge that Buddy's wife is Rhea Ripley. It's an absolute secret, cannot be mentioned. It's always kind of just funny how some things are okay and some things aren't, even though they're exactly the same thing.
So the Plug and Dynamite, where MJF and Hangman will go face-to-face, and then things get complicated. So we had a pretty straightforward challenger issues a challenge to the champion match earlier between Omega and Takeshita. But no, there must be a series of matches. Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong this Wednesday on Dynamite. Former international champions, both of them. The winner of that will then challenge Takeshita the next week on Dynamite. And the winner of that will then defend against Kenny Omega at Revolution.
Yes. The series.
All right.
It's actually a number one contenders match. It's basically what it is.
Yeah. It seems like a, you know, more complicated than it needs to be, but fine. We also got The Ops versus Patriarchy and Powerhouse Hobbs versus Big Bill in a street fight. We have a Mariah May, Toni Storm recap video. I'm sick of talking about this. I'm sure most of you are sick of listening to me talk about this. I will just say one thing here. As it ends, Tony Schiavone asks, seemingly rhetorically, was it role play therapy or elaborate performance art? And then he says, only Toni Storm knows for sure. I agree. Only Toni Storm knows for sure what's going on here.
You know what's funny is this match starts, or it doesn't even start. They announce the match, and Toni time, the Toni Storm music plays. And place goes nuts, and the big video on the screen. And then all of a sudden, there's like the record scratch.
The film burns away.
To the timeless Toni music. And I'm just watching this thinking, you know, we had a really fucking convoluted thing that we did when she came back, where she pretended to be Toni the entire time. And then it was all a ruse to get her ass kicked by Mariah May. And, you know, everyone's like praising us, great and everything. And I was just like, I don't know about the whole, like, you know, the idea of what is going on here?
What's happening?
Jared, is this free right now?
Oh.
It's fine, but I think somehow we ended up with a free stream of this show. So, hello, everybody watching for free. You're lucked out. It wasn't supposed to be free. Anyway, so, yes, he says. Okay. Anyway, I just noticed that. But anyway, the point of this is you get a free show, everybody. WrestlingObserver.com. Anyway, so.
You're welcome.
The whole shebang they did with Toni, they should have just had her come back as Toni Storm. I mean, if you want to do the thing where she pretends like she doesn't remember Timeless Toni, fine. But I can't figure out why they didn't just keep it going and then just do what they did at the beginning here, where they hit the Toni time music and the place goes nutty, but then there's a record scratch, and then they hit Timeless's music, and then Mariah in the ring is like, oh shit, it's Timeless! And now she's like in a state, and then Mariah, and then Toni comes down and beats her ass as Timeless Toni. I think that would have been better than what they did. It would have been simpler. It would have been obvious the game because, you know, Toni would have waited till the last minute and then sprung it on her. So the heels caught off guard and in the big match. I mean, that would have been, to me, way better.
We wouldn't have had to listen to Mariah no sell Timeless Toni.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But, I thought the match was good.
They had a good match. It was funny because they did a lot of stuff. The hip attack rushes and storm zeros and power bombs out of the corners and near falls and handstand ranas and every time you think it's going to be a pin, either somebody gets a foot on the ropes, they roll out of the ring or whatever. And then Mariah May hits a storm zero. She goes for Mayday and Toni just cradles her and pins her. Flash cradle out of nowhere after like a dozen finishers. They finished a cradle one. But the place went nuts. Everyone is happy. Obviously, the story is not finished yet. We've brought Timeless Toni back. She got her big win over the home in her home country. Everyone was happy. It was the first big win for an Aussie on the show, so that made it even happier. She's out there dressed literally in the Australian flag. And a huge win. Apparently, Toni's fourth reign already.
And you know what's funny? Yeah, she's a four-time champion. Yeah. You know what's funny about it, too, is if you would have done it my way, where the entire build, she was, you know, Toni time. And then on this show, she reverted back. Mariah gets caught off guard. And on top of that, Mariah gets pinned with a flash cradle, small package instead of her finish. Then you've got like Mariah, you know, you showed up with a different gimmick. You caught me off guard. You pinned me, like cradled me. You know, that's great to set up a rematch. Whereas, you know, when this was over, like the way that they did it, where, you know, she revealed that she was Timeless Tony weeks in advance. And then, you know, Mariah's all ready to go. I thought for sure it was going to be, you know, short pile driver, whatever they call it, Storm Zero, 1-2-3 in the middle. Instead, Mariah just kicked out of everything, and then Tony had a small packager. It was like a weird finish. Like, they're clearly going to do another match, but I just think they overthought all of this.
I actually saw a thing on one of the social medias today, and it's like all the matches that Tony had won up until this match, and she'd used the small package a lot on all those wins. So it was kind of...
She's the new Bryan Danielson.
Well, no, Tony Time did when she came back. Tony Storm, Timeless Tony did not. And she was Timeless Tony here.
Bryan, it's the same person.
Well, no, but the story they're telling is it's not. That's the point.
I understand what you're saying,
though. So anyway. So, yeah, that was that. Two good shows. And I thought that this is the fourth real good show in a row for AEW. I feel like they're on a minor roll here.
Their last month has been their best month in a year or two.
Years, actually.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say that.
Yes.
Well, hey, everybody, if you're listening for free, now you got to hear this plug, because WrestleMania weekend is coming up, and we got a lot of stuff going on. So if you are going to WrestleMania weekend, we got events on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's a live Q&A and meet and greet. You want to come meet Dave and I? Friday at the Palms Hotel and Casino at noon is the meet and greet and the Q&A. You can ask us questions. And then we've got a Brazilian steakhouse lunch on Saturday at noon. We have got watch-alongs in the suite on both Saturday and Sunday nights, if you want to be involved in the watch-along. We have a suite party at the same suite after WrestleMania on Saturday and Sunday. And we've got a Wicked Spoon brunch, and Ed's running a wrestling show. And there's a lot of stuff going on. So if you're going to be in town...
Vinny V's Karaoke Bash.
Vinny's Karaoke Bash. If you are going to be in town, go to f4wonline.com/Vegas and get your tickets now for any or all of these events, particularly the Q&A. Get your tickets now while you can. f4wonline.com/Vegas. That's a Q&A and the meet and greet. And everybody always has a good time. So join us for any of these events. And we'll be back on Tuesday, Vinny, with what?
Mid-South Wrestling.
I thought you were looking it up 13. While I was doing that plug.
I think it's much more karaoke. Never mind. It's Mid-South Wrestling Season 6. I want to say 13. It is, in fact, Episode 13.
Mid-South Wrestling Season 6, Episode 13. You can watch along with us every Tuesday as a subscriber.
My favorite show of the week.
Hey, Jared, can you put the graphic up for these freeloaders here, how they can sign up? WrestlingObserver.com. is the main site with all of the newsletters and the radio shows and everything else. And you can also subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. And all of those are just $9.99. So here's the graphic, Jared. Throw it up there, brother. Let's see it. Take me off, if you can. Can we do that? That's my ceiling you're looking at right now. So yes, podcast only. You can get it on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube, which, by the way, is full HD video like you're watching now for free. And you can get the podcast, the Observer newsletter, the podcast archives, Observer archives, moderated message board, community exclusive news articles, and more, all at WrestlingObserver.com. That's $14.99 a month for everything, including archives going back to 2005 for the radio shows, and 1991 for the Observers. So check out any of those. Sign up today. And that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.
Adios.